Hey, Adrian.
Good morning. Nice to meet you. I've heard your voice. I feel like I know you, and this is the first time we've gotten to talk. So thank you.
Thank you for joining. Pet in Mind. You started this in 2014, right?
Yes, I left corporate America in 2014. I was in medical devices for 10 years. Played a little bit of pro football prior to that. So I graduated University of Richmond 2003, originally from North Carolina. Played college ball at University of Richmond, graduated, played 2 years in Canada. After that, I briefly in the NFL in 05, got cut. And it wasn't fun for me anymore. I stopped pursuing it. They cut me, but I stopped pursuing it and moved on and went into medical devices and brain and spine surgery. And I spent 10 years there and I loved it. I'm a nerd. I love being in surgery. But I wanted to get back to my passion, which was pets.
I feel like I just got a resume from Adrian. There's definitely more to you than that. Successful college athlete, you build bonds and relationships that are, I think, with athletes, so different than any other. Especially in college.
Yeah, so, I mean, I have my best friends in life, and I have some friends I grew up with as well from North Carolina, but the guys I talk to literally on a daily basis, five of us, we were same year at University of Richmond, and with 20 plus years past college, and we literally text and talk, still support each other. Two of them actually were friends and family investors in my business. So yeah, the brotherhood is real. Now, I think we have even deeper brotherhood than most because we had a really, our coach, Coach Reed, which I still talk to, he was really tough program and not tough in a way that it was tough, good tough, right? We grew up. We went through a lot together, so we truly became brothers, and it lasts. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it matters for sure.
Do you build those type of relationships being in the pet business? Do you see those kinds of relationships? I know without athletics and working together and having the same goal and winning and supporting each other is very different than anything else. But in business, owning a business, having staff, training them, making sure they're on your team and you're working together. Sure. What are the similarities and what are the differences and how is pet different than what you did before in medical devices?
Sure. Three different industries because football is an industry too, right? So that portion of it, pro ball, in my opinion, is a job, right? But it's a tough job. It's a physical job. It's a perfection job. Like you literally can't make mistakes or you're going to get cut, right? So that is the pressure of that and what I learned from football is resilience. It's that you always get up, right? That's one of the things. You never stay on the ground long on a football field, pop back up. You learn how to be a teammate. You learn how to communicate with people of all races and persuasions and everything else because you have 80 plus dudes on a football team, right? So I am who I am because of football, right? My competitiveness, my resilience, I love people. Been on teams my whole life, right? So football, I can talk about all day on the lessons that I learned from football. And honestly, I won't get deep into it because it's not about football, but even the game today on how they're less hitting and look, we get it. CTE is serious, but football is voluntary, right? And it's a lot of football that is changing in a way that it worries me for younger people coming up that they're not going to get the same experience because I'm a man because of football. And really because of nothing else, I grew up and I learned how to be responsible and show up in the moment, right?
Wait, you said football is voluntary, but what if as a kid, that's all you had and you went to college, you had college football, didn't you have scholarships?
Yeah, full scholarship, yeah.
Okay, so what if that's all you have and that goes away? How is that voluntary?
No, I'm so I guess what I'm saying, I'm a football player, right? I was a linebacker, right? So hitting is part of it. And it just drives me crazy that they don't let them hit anymore. And I know that may seem barbaric to you, but it's deeper than just the hitting for me, right? It's that you learn adversity and how to overcome it. The fourth quarter when you're tired and it's so much you learn from even getting knocked out. And I got knocked out a few times, but it's so much you learn from that it worries me that they're changing it so much, right? I grew up because of football. I have lifelong friends because of football. So when you start to tweak the game, even with stats and stuff, quarterbacks are holding the ball longer because they're not getting hit. It's changing the game. And football is a game of chess, right? The quarterback has to throw the ball quicker because he may get hit. But now you can't hit him. They're holding the ball longer. Receivers are catching it. So it's just a different game. And when you fundamentally change the knob on something, I don't think those kids are going to get the same experience we got. They don't even have two-a-days anymore. And it's like, no, two-a-days, that's the moments you grow up. That's the moments you go through something and you come out the other side of it. So they're just missing a lot of lessons. And now it's just a game. It's just a game now, in my opinion. It's not a life lesson. It's not a, I don't know if these kids will walk away with best friends anymore because they're not going through anything. The reason I'm bonded with those guys is because we busted our tails at 4 a.m. and all the stuff we went through for 4 years with the tough coach that loved us, but we worked. We 5 minutes early for everything, right? So now I'm completely terrified of being late and I'm in my 40s. Right? Yeah. That's instilled in you, right? So it's things that I think you get from the rough parts of the game that they're changing.
Why do you think it's being changed? Obviously the concussion, obviously the injuries, but beside that, touring, why would that be changed?
I think we're in a, well, I have a lot of opinions, but I think we're in a society that's just, we're so polarized that people grab onto anything. Right. And I think CTE, it's serious. I'm not downplaying that at all. But I just think it's lessons that can be learned on a football field that aren't going to get learned now. So why they're doing that, they don't want it. Everybody's litigious and they're worried about that. Right. So when I say it's voluntary, maybe not at the little league level. Right. Because your parents are taking you. And most of the time they're playing flag much longer now. I was playing tackle football at 6 years old. Right now they're playing flag up until middle school. So they're tweaking that. But as far as college and pro, that's voluntary. And it should be an arena. Like we are gladiators. And coming out of that, I am who I am because of football. And I don't say that lightly.
Let's talk about you being a gladiator in business. Mm-hmm. And how you've applied those teachings from football and your relationships in your current business. Pet in mind.
Talk about that. It's a lot of parallels, right? Business, you across competition. Probably the biggest thing for me, in medical devices, I learned business. In football, I learned life, right? So I got to apply both of those and becoming an entrepreneur. The gladiator part, and this is one of the things that I'm starting to grab onto more. I'm an emotional intelligence coach, and it's something that's important to me, but I'm grabbing on the reality thing a lot more because, you know, we're 8 years in. I left medical devices in not the best way, to be honest, and it was depressing. It hurt. I started a business, a brick and mortar business that I was standing in every day for years, depressed, right? Because of the way I left the industry, because you started a business, it's stressful. I made a tons of mistakes at first. So what I look at now when I'm on a podcast like your platform where I'm mentoring or coaching is the reality, right? Yes, it's success is possible. Yes, you're going to have to work hard, but it's going to be a lot of things you need to go through that you can't necessarily get around. I'm a big proponent of going through things and not in a way that you look for trouble or you look for hardship. Absolutely not. Like if you can get in easy, do it. But I understand that at this moment, 8 years in, and we're pivoting to franchising and doing something again that I'm not familiar with. So I'm always learning and growing, but I'm able to move and do things and jump off the ship and swim to the next island because I've done it before. And I think that's what, when you say a gladiator in business, everybody thinks I talk about business when I talk, because I'm always talking about positive and how, but I'm really talking about life and I like to live what I preach. And okay. A gladiator in business, and what I want people to get from me when I talk over these next few years is that the reality of it is you're gonna go through a lot, but it's okay. It's gonna hurt, but it's okay. You're going to be depressed, but it's okay. Sometimes I think, are getting too soft in society and everybody wants it easy, but easy doesn't last.
Tell me about the coaching. Tell me why you got into that coaching, because clearly you have this drive to be better, do better, grow. And yeah, society is a little bit lazy. They want things handed to them. And just the football thing with kids not touring and the changes that are being made, it's almost like everyone's being sheltered from feeling. And we have to go back to feeling.
Yeah, exactly.
And using words beyond, I'm happy, I'm sad, happy, sad, happy, sad. Screw exactly. that shit. Let's exactly. talk about, you know, the reality. I am burning up inside and freaking out. I'm scared to death. I can't sleep. Yes. I don't know if I'm going to make money. I don't know what I'm doing. Did I lose myself and who I am? Blah, blah, blah.
All of that.
Tell me about your coaching.
Yeah. So, I mean, I grew up being coached, right? So I'm coaching is something. I think the biggest reason that emotional intelligence is a new field, right? Relatively in the scheme of other disciplines. Yes. So when I say emotional intelligence, I always like to say it to people and just get their reaction, because some people are like, that's not real. And then other people are like, well, tell me how it works, right? Emotional intelligence for me, I'm not a glass half empty or full guy. I don't have a glass. I show up and I'm me. I'm not in a box. I'm not shaped, right? So I truly believe that in life, you need to know who you are. The reason I was able to show up every day depressed, because I knew that it was okay. I knew that it was, you have to work. You're going to get to the fourth. You're going to win. It's nothing stays the same. Right. So, but I know that because I went through it, and that's because I've learned myself.
Wait, when you showed up depressed, did you hover in the depression, or did you push through it and have a focal point beyond that space?
You're good at this question thing. I love it. That's a great question. So, emotional intelligence is knowing who you are, strengths and weaknesses. And I'm going to ask you a question. And then so you understand other people. Right. So when I say emotional intelligence, people are, we always say you're too emotional. That's one of the most false statements in the world. You should feel. Adrenaline is to tell you something is going on. Run from the bear and you can jump higher right now because of adrenaline. But if you let that adrenaline make you hit somebody in the face because you were mad in traffic, it's the behavior, not the emotion. Emotions are a guide. Mm-hmm. Right. And we should feel them. You should feel it. So in that depression, I'm not the one to walk around and say I'm depressed. Oh my God, I'm so anxious. That talk really bothers me. But I'm okay with the way I feel. I'm not gonna lay in bed because I feel less than, or because I feel like an imposter, or if I feel like somebody did me wrong. I'm gonna get up and go anyway. It's okay to feel this. As a matter of fact, I should feel it, because I've learned, because going through things, everything, it's always a glory to glory, faith to faith, right? It's never, unless you're going backwards. So in order for me at step eight years in and to do what we're doing, I had to go through step 1 through 7. And we skip steps in our culture. In that depression, walking into that store every day, and I did it all wrong. I was by myself for 2 years. I should have hired somebody. But we live and we learn, right? I wasn't a business owner. I was in corporate. So I learned the hard way. But I'm not walking around wearing depression on my sleeve. No, I still hold doors. I still smile at people. People are, and that's why I'm doing emotional intelligence. And that's why it's important to me, because I love people and I love to be a part of their success. So the energy that I got was from the people walking in the door, right? So I don't wear it. I don't talk about it. I don't say I'm depressed today. Feel sorry for me. Absolutely not. I just understand what I'm feeling is for a reason, because I decided to go out and go after something bigger. I decided to go independent. And so you should understand, if you've gone through things before, that, okay, you're going to make this big change in life. You're going to have to go through some more things. So it's just the understanding that I don't waste these opportunities. It went out, and I'll shut up after this for your next question, but it was a video I posted on LinkedIn, and I posted it on some other social. It was a young man at the NFL Combine recently. And the most recent one, last week, offensive lineman, he actually tore his ACL at the combine. Right now, that's depressing. You could see it on him, but he didn't go home. He lifted the next day and did 38, did the most bench presses this particular combine. He showed up and still did what he was able to physically do. Mm-hmm. He might not get drafted as high as he would have, but his stock went up. Because when I see that young man, he's a winner. He's a leader. Mm-hmm. He can put reality aside and still be himself and show up in his responsibility. So when you talk about football and what I've learned and being a gladiator in business, and do you walk in that depression? No. It the moment is required if you want to get to where you want to be. And that's the biggest thing I learned in football, because it's controlled chaos. You're running around the field hitting people. You're tired. You're sweating. You're bleeding. You're hurting. But you're still showing up in that moment because you practiced 10,000 hours for 3 minutes in a game.
Practice 10,000 hours. You practice 10,000 hours.
For 3 minutes in a game, right? So it's and that young man gets that. You don't get moments over and over and over. You have to show up in those moments when they're there, right? And especially when you put all the work into just a small little piece of glory. And that's what I've learned. And that's why I don't walk in the depression I felt then. I recognize why I was feeling that way. And I kept walking in it, because now I can use that as a lesson for the next, because I'm always going higher.
Yeah. I'm not saying that you sat there, you know, wallowing in it, but it wasn't present when you were working with your customers, when you were sitting there 2 years working on your own. It was in your soul. And mm-hmm. you were carrying it with you. That's where emotional intelligence starts developing, because you're sitting in those emotions and going through the waves. It's like being on a surfboard, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. That wave's coming. If you don't catch it, and sometimes being in that depressed state,
you don't see it. No discernment.
You don't see it. It kind of smacks into you, and you're off that board, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So it's that process and that practice. That every single time you're like, oh shit, the wave's coming. I'm going to turn around. I'm going to start paddling.
Exactly.
And look back real quick and get up. Ride.
Exactly. Get up.
And that ride can be so easy and so exhilarating, right? And then you will crash. There will be those,
be another.
Those moments teach you how to catch the bigger wave.
Exactly.
So that's what I see as emotional intelligence, sitting in those emotions.
Mm-hmm. Understanding it, understanding yourself, understanding that it's okay. It's okay to, if you say something in a minute that I'll cry right now. And people look at me like, he's a man crying. And he's just emote, let it out. What I would say in that depressed state that I focused on is open up. It's a world around me. See, when depression kind of puts you in a shell, right? And you don't want to interact. You just shut down. No, actually, my worst feeling days, I will go joke with a stranger on the elevator. I'll come outside of yourself. Let the depression go. Because what I feel better when I talk to people. I feel better when I make somebody smile. I'll feel better when I can hold the door for somebody that was a little too far away for me to wait and hold it, but I did it, right? So I look for those moments to even in that feeling of just being down and lost and the world seems smaller, and how did this happen? Open up, connect with people. That's what's intended.
How is corporate different from having your own business? You went from medical device sales and being in ORs with neurosurgeons to having a retail store.
So it's much different. So medical devices is an interesting industry. You know, my office was in surgery. I'm looking at a surgeon doing brain surgery. So I had all the hospitals in Florida. So on one parallel, it was very similar to being an entrepreneur in that particular role, because I had a 50 hospitals in South Florida or in Washington, D.C. when I was up there. And it was my job to go and infiltrate and get the business, right? So it was a lot of entrepreneurial in that particular role, because I was an outside sales rep and I was literally killing what I ate, right? And then I went internal as a brand manager, and that gave me a whole different perspective of corporate, right? Because now I'm really into politics. Out in sales and medical devices, your numbers, hit your numbers. Mm-hmm. And as long as you don't do anything illegal, you're fine, right? But you come internal, it's a lot of politics, a lot of, I'm a great teammate. I'm a great leader because I'm a great follower. I'm a teammate, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm able to lead because I can inspire people and set the example. But in corporate, one of the challenges I had was that I'm Adrian. If I show up at the White House or in, on the corner, I'm me, and I'm okay with that. And corporate, oftentimes, the real person may not show up. And so I'm not perfect. Things I could have done better of maybe cutting myself down a little bit. But it was tough from that position. Now, what I did like about corporate is I was able to, and I have a team now that's growing, but I really appreciated the fact that I could hire young people and help develop them and help them get to where they wanted to be. I still talk to a lot of the younger people that I managed 10, 15 years ago. So that's what I appreciated about it. But that's team building, and I'm able to start to get to do now more as we pivot. So the corporate and entrepreneurial, you know, out here, it's, you don't have a life vest. I can't have a day off where I can just go and, you know, I'm at the office, but I have a team, and if I don't get it done today, it's not going to. But out here, if somebody's not getting it done, we don't move at all, right? So it's a much more of a higher responsibility. It's something that I think, especially just paying bills. It was a time in my entrepreneur that, you know, $3,000, $4,000 checks going out all the time. I almost didn't even want to look at the bank account. I had to grow. Whereas I think sometimes in corporate, you can remain handicapped forever and get by with it.
What a good statement. That is so true. You can kind of put a band-aid on everything and not move forward, but act like you're moving forward. Exactly. That's how corporate was for me. Like, how much time and money gets wasted at that level? It's amazing. And then you go into your own business, and you have to, you're moving like a speedboat. So with Pet in Mind, you started that, your focus is on nutrition, health. I've read other interviews you've done, I've listened to others, and you talk about how health is so important. Now, you're not the first doing this. What would make someone want to jump into a Pet in Mind franchise versus another one that's out there? Because there's so many out now. There's so many franchises popping up left and right.
Yeah, what, franchising is a popular deal, right? So number one, our concept is, we're calling it small box, right? And it fits the times. And what that basically is, a small footprint, highly curated. We know exactly what pet parents want, only high quality. And we want to give a personalized experience, meaning that you come in and you can talk, and we get to know you and talk about your pet, talk about your family. We get to know you, right? And what that allows us to do is help of that journey of the pet. Hopefully when you come to us with the puppy and we go to a senior dog or a kitten, we go to a senior cat. That's what we want to do. Me as the founder, and what my mission is I love people, and I love pets. And I don't say that lightly. I've had every pet in the world. I wanted to be a veterinarian. I started pre-vet in college and switched my major and didn't do it. But this is me. But I also love people. I love to see people win. I like to be a part of it. I like to see people overcome. I've helped competitors. A new store opened a couple of years ago, about 5 miles from me. And I guess he had a hiccup early on and couldn't order. And I ordered for him one time, right? My competitor. So that's me. I don't compete. I show up and I am who I am. I fill the room up. I'm valuable. I think the biggest thing as far as why I did Pet in Mind, I had a cat at the time named Rocco. They had a lot of nutrition issues back in the early 2000s, and the natural and all these new things didn't exist. And I did a little research and realized it was his food. We fixed it. And so 7, 8, 10 years later, I came back to it, right? Okay, I know what the market needs. What's different in a Pet in Mind is we focus on the people too. Our slogan is a people place for pets, right? If you're humanizing your pet, you can come in and buy the things that make them feel human-like. But we also love those people. And if you look at our reviews, what's special about us is that people have community with us. They have relationship with us. And then going further than that, we're also franchising. So we're dealing in helping entrepreneurs with the small box model that is not a big investment. It's not a $2 million investment of some of those bigger franchises.
What kind of investment is it?
It's about $200, $250, depending on the area you're in. The square footage, 900 to 2,000 square feet tops. We have the service with it. We call hygiene, no grooming. And hygiene is not a new model. We call it that.
Self-wash hygiene?
Self-wash. We incorporate teeth brushing, ear cleaning, and nail cutting into that. So it fits well with our teaching and our personalization and the nutrition. And from there, you have an omni-channel approach. You can order online, get it picked up. We can deliver it. We can do everything that a Chewy can do as far as delivering it. But the difference is it's about people too. We grow people. If you go talk to people in my past, if I die today and you go to my funeral, I know what people will say about me. At least the top two or three things, because I'm consistent and it's important to me. So people mean something. So I want to see entrepreneurs come to the pet industry. It's not a lot of people that look like me. We're not only going after minorities, but we need more minorities in this pet industry, not just from a business perspective, but the animals are healthy for us and our community needs to be okay with that, right? So I want that to be the example when people see me. That's what's different. And number two, from the business perspective, the pet industry always grows. We're in a very uncertain time right now, right? So that small box, you can come in, a couple of our franchisees that have come aboard, we've helped them find partners in order to do it. You don't need a ton of money. We mentor and help. My passion, and I hate retail, to be honest with you. I'm not a detail-oriented operator to run stores. I'm a bigger picture guy, right? And franchising fits me well, right? I can put people in place to make sure the retail is going well. But the growing people, being a part of people's success, bringing people on and helping them become entrepreneurs when they never may have done it. And then the mentoring long-term. I'm an emotional intelligence coach. I've jumped ship from corporate America and done it successfully. So I can help people bridge that gap. So what's different about Pet and Mind is our goal isn't just to make money. Our goal isn't just to be a bigger pet company. Our goal is to bring people along with us. And that's what's important. And that's what would be different, me and any other franchise out there, is that, and certainly right now as an emerging franchise, we're at the open level of it. So you get me. You're buying my mistakes, and I made a lot of them, right? But I also don't have a quit button, so I'm able to apply those mistakes and help other people. So that's what's different. You're going to have companies that may have a better infrastructure than us because they have 200 locations. We have 4 now.
More doesn't mean better, Adrian. I think you're at a great place where you can set up standard operating procedures where you can keep that small business view and community view and expand it to reach, to have huge outreach. Is Rocco still with us?
You made me cry. So he died last summer.
I'm sorry.
August, yeah. He's 18. Rocco was an Abyssinian. Mm-hmm. So very personable cat. He acted like a dog. People loved him. And he was my first pet out of college. So he went everywhere with me. And I moved a lot. And, you know, so road trips, he's on my lap. He did everything. So that's honestly going to make me cry. But that's why I did this. Mm-hmm. And he was a good companion.
Yeah. I'm sorry about Rocco, but look what he brought. Life, unfortunately. Damn, look what he brought you.
Yeah, it's life.
I know. Hey, sit in the emotion. No, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Now you're gonna make me cry. Oh,
please. I mean, I'm not ashamed to cry, but that one,
Yeah.
It was painful because it 18 years of it, but we're good.
Yeah. You have kids.
Yes.
You have pets.
Look at me.
Your wife, who I've met.
You got me crying, Tess.
I'm sorry. Hey, what do you expect? The same old?
No, I love it. I love it. This is good. Emotional intelligence.
It is. Sit in it, Adrian. So how are your kids with you and the business and the pets? Tell me about kids' relationship with the pets, because growing up with pets is amazing. And I do want to talk about race within the pet industry. So I want you to go into that after you talk about your kids, because those two are very related.
That's important. It's big time important. So I have a 16-year-old daughter, almost 17, and I have a 3-year-old daughter named Eliza. I'm probably a better father now at 42. That 16-year-old got me at a young age when I was still running the streets and extremely driven on just work. The way I left corporate America, it brought back what was important for me, right? My foundation was what my career, my knowing neurosurgeons that are world renowned and traveling, and that was my God as far, and it was too important in my life. My family was second or third. My faith was second or third. So I had to get my priorities straight. So I didn't have a father growing up. I had a very strong mother, very strong grandmother, very strong mother side. So it was very important for me to be a present father. I'm probably still learning how to be a father, but being in my children's life is important. I don't have any biological children. And I say that not to point that out to be negative. I point that out because we had 12 miscarriages, and we had a stillborn as well. And then we haven't been pregnant since. And our 17-year-old daughter is my wife's daughter. I raised her. So I'm a father as well. And then we adopted a baby 3 years ago that we literally didn't even do anything. It was crazy. We went to a new church, heard a message on fostering. My wife has wanted to do it forever. I was an egotistical male. We're going to still have our own. And then it got to a point where I didn't want to put my wife through it anymore. And we kind of just trusted God on it. And we heard this new message about fostering. And I said, you know what, let's explore it after walking out of church. And literally, and we didn't do much. We're both busy. My wife's a lawyer. We went to a couple meetings, but we were going to go into it slow. And we literally got a call a month and a half later. A young lady was having a baby that she didn't want, and called us because my wife's sister knew her, never met her. Brand new bouncing newborn baby. So what I tell you that, how important are my children in my life? Well, that was an indication to me, and not just children, but race and everything that goes on around me, is that we all have a purpose. We're connected. A bumblebee dies. If they die, we die at some point. The earth dies. Everything out here is connected. And what I realized on the blessing that we were fighting so hard to get for years and miscarriages and stillborns, sometimes we look for gifts, Taz, that aren't wrapped the way we want them to be, so we don't realize they're gifts. And so what I learned is that my purpose is a bridge in this world. I bridge things together, whether it's race, whether it's people, whether it's the plan. I understand I have a purpose in it. And I understand that I'm not looking for perfection anymore. I'm looking for love. I'm looking for kindness. I'm looking for putting good things out. And I realized that day, just saying yes to something, I had no idea what it was. And I really didn't want it. I do want children. I don't adopt it and foster it. Okay. But just opening my heart up and saying, yes, it's not wrapped the way I want it, but let's think about it. And immediately got sent to us, literally. So what that says to me, and what I think other people need to hear, is that get outside of yourself. You're selfish. We all are. And a lot of the things that we go after, that we desire, that we work for, is wrapped up in our purpose, but we're not walking in our purpose first. So we come out, open up to the world, and allow what's supposed to happen to happen. Stop saying that I don't, for instance, want to adopt a child, and then the adopted child has changed my life. She's a beautiful little girl. Our 16-year-old loves her. She went through a lot with us having, and it's that perfection that we found. Mm-hmm. Came in such a way that was imperfect, and that's the beauty of it. So I no longer walk around with only my goals and I'm looking to connect with others, and not in a selfish way, but in a way that I can help things come to pass because I have a purpose.
Do you think that people are kind of self-absorbed and selfish because they're afraid of the unpredictable?
Yeah, people want. So probably the biggest juxtaposition in life and on this planet is that people want so many things that they're unwilling to change to get, and not change in a negative way. People are too self-absorbed. I want what I want, but maybe if you connect with that person right there, what you want will come to pass because we're all connected. So that's when I say, how do you get over depression? I don't know how to get over it, but I know how to be in it, and it's connect. It's hear other people's story. It's smiling at someone else. It's opening the door. It's so many ways to get those endorphins, the positive ones, going in the right direction in our neural system. If we just do a little thing called opening up and seeing the sunshine and connecting, just like the bumblebee does with the flower.
Let's talk about this industry and how you see race in the pet industry. because I'm a little bit critical of it. You know, I went to a leadership conference and they were talking about race and there was not one Black person in the room with over 300 people. And I just thought, well, how are they talking about this?
How does that happen?
What the fuck are they talking about? How about, you know, and they're very old school people. I mean, they don't even have Radio Row like other trade shows do. And that's something I brought up to a couple of the members, but it's just amazing to me how there's a disconnect with what's going on in the world and life. And talk to me.
Yeah. Hey. So obviously, and I'm glad you're passionate about it. You know, I think Martin Luther King said it best, is that it's the people in the middle that work. So folks like yourself that have a passion for something that you don't necessarily have to have a passion for. You're the one that changed. I'm a bridge builder. I'm a connector, right? So I have absolutely no problem talking about race. Never have. And I think what happens in our society is again, everybody's self-absorbed, including the on both sides, right? So nobody wants to meet in the middle. I've been in medical devices. I would go to a trade show with thousands of people there and you could count on your hand, right? So I've always been in industries or in environments that I may be one of the only ones. And that's why I'm in very intent on being authentic. I don't do code switching, if you know what that is. Code switching is something that African Americans growing up, you have to learn to do. And code switching means when I come talk to you, I change my voice, I change my tone, right? And it's important to me that I never do that. I'm gonna come be me. I'm gonna be respectful. I'm gonna be who I am. I had to cut so when I stopped playing football, and this will give you a perfect example of the world we live in. I stopped playing football. I have locks again, but at the time they were longer because I had them throughout college, like 8 years long. I stopped playing football and I interviewed 4 times, didn't get them, cut my hair, got the next job. Nothing changed about me, but my hair. So that's the world we live in, is that we live in this world that we have these meetings of how we can change things, but then nobody does it. So it's about execution, just like entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. We can have all these DEI programs, but if nobody's really behind them, then what's the point? So race in America, especially in the pet industry, this is exactly why I'm franchising. This is why I'm getting the message out. You know, this is why, as an emotional intelligence coach, I understand that a lot of things that go on in somebody's life that may not have exposure to something, or I may not like I'm the first business owner in my family. And I have a family, my mom was a magistrate, my grandmother was a local politician, but it's things that we're still first generation. So what we have to understand about that is that it takes a lot to from an emotional intelligence perspective of how you interact in circles that you don't feel comfortable in, that you feel like an imposter in. And it really is about opening up. So I think all my messages come back to the same thing, is open up, come outside of yourself, both sides. Mm-hmm. The pet industry needs more minorities because pets are healthy. Pets do wonderful things for children as far as responsibility and empathy and understanding death. Understanding things that are going to happen in life, the pet industry has such a big, should be more of a part of our communities. Now, we also have to be honest about, and I think this is where we in America need to be honest about both sides, right?
Tell me.
Why are Black people scared of dogs for the most part?
Are they? Do you see that? I don't. And I'm in New York.
Things are changing for sure. Maybe I won't say scared. Maybe I will say they just don't have the same experience with dogs, right? And the reason being is that it was a thing called Civil Rights Movement. It's a thing called Jim Crow.
Jim Crow, yeah.
The dogs bit us, mm-hmm. right? So that's the thing, is that it's some trauma there that we must recognize and acknowledge. Just like people have to acknowledge a drug abuse and to get over it, we have to acknowledge things.
Mm-hmm.
And not to gain pity and not to blame, things need to be released. So it's reasons why. How do we address those reasons? Well, it's going to take change makers like you and me. It's going to take somebody like yourself. It's like, look, let's talk about race. It's going to take people like me that are able to talk about it in a clear, concise way and come off as passionate, but not angry. So both sides need to do things, but it takes people like us. It takes people to take a risk. So if I'm willing to risk corporate America and jumping ship and not making six figures for years like I used to and being an entrepreneur and all the things we go through, then I should be able to risk having a real conversation with people to help them understand. Because what we lack in our society is empathy. I should be able to look at somebody that doesn't look like me and feel just as bad for somebody that looks like me. It shouldn't be that, well, he's white and I don't care if that happened to him. And she, that we need to come outside of ourselves. And the only solution I can tell you, Taz, is that I'm responsible for that. You're responsible for that.
Individual.
We are all responsible for it. It's not going to happen because some company that has a DEI program. It's not going to happen because of something that happened in society that makes everybody's hearts bleed for a couple of weeks and then they're back to their normal silos. Mm-hmm. We are all responsible for it and nothing's going to change if they don't. However, I truly believe, not from a self-importance perspective, I believe I'm valuable to every room I walk in. And that's not because I'm an egotistical maniac. I'm empathetic. I love people. But we have to get away from the idea that we don't control anything. We don't, except yourself.
Yeah.
And we need to be responsible for how we act and how we treat people and who we hire and who we talk to. And so I can't tell you how to change it other than I'm going to be part of it.
Well, I want to be on that ride with you.
You're on, no worries. You don't even need a ticket. Come on. No, but I really mean that, though. I think if we all are responsible, I should be able to. But what I've learned about that is, and so it all goes back to the same thing, in my opinion. Like, I can have a bad day and still smile at you. And unfortunately, but a lot of people can't. If they're having a bad day, they'll shoot you.
Well, they'll put that on you. It'll be you're in their way.
They so I don't see life like that.
You're having a bad day, you're in their way. You are going to impact their day. You're going to be the reason why they can't get over it. No one wants to look at themselves and figure it out. We have so much help. There's so many people out there who are willing and able to help. There's all this, there's free psychological, psychiatric care now, online psychiatric care. But you have to take the step.
You have to do it. You're responsible for yourself. And I think the biggest thing, and I'll shut up because I love your questions. For instance, when you pull up at a stoplight and you have the two lanes that are going straight and you have the left turn lane, right? And you have that left turn light. How many times, and this is just how I think, but how many times has somebody been sitting, you're trying to get over into the left turn lane, the light turns green and you can't get over because they won't move up 10 feet. It's room for them to move up. Right? So what that shows you and demonstrates to you is that we are in our own little bubble. Look in your mirror and see what's going on behind you and move up. Mm-hmm. This is not your world. But so just those little things I notice, and that's why life is never this big pull of the instrument. It's the little things that we refuse to change. Move up. So pay attention. Look in your mirror. Oh my God, there's a car behind me. And if I move up, he can go. Care about it. I care that other people are able to move past me in an easy way. I appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate you. Thank you for doing this today.
Where are you from? Where you live at?
I live in New York City, but I'm from Iran. I was born in Iran, came here as a kid because I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes and misdiagnosed. And my mom just packed us up and brought us here. I'm grateful every day. Yeah. My gratitude list has been going on for 10 years.
But that's the thing. So what I find out is that right there, that gratitude is that when you have just a general gratitude, you have it for everything.
Oh yeah.
I appreciate this stranger enough on the elevator and I'm going to see if I can make them smile. Mm-hmm. And if they don't, then at least I smile.
But, you know, it stays with them. You know, when I have great, when I have conversations, just random things come up. There's a reason why those happen. I really believe the energy that we're in brings so much back to us. Yeah. And I'm not, it's not, I don't do it with intentions. Like I'm doing this to get something in return. I mean, that's just who I am.
Yeah.
You know,
it feels good.
So good.
Yeah. So how do you go? How do you show up somewhere for years and depress other people? Be selfish and make other people feel good because it makes me feel good. That's how selfish I am. I'm extremely selfish.
That's a good selfish. Kind of step out of our own way. And every time we say, I only want it this way. I don't want to do this unless this happens. I'm not going to do this unless this happens. Well, nothing's going to happen. You're going to be in that zone forever and a day.
Ever.
You know? And if you're going to wait for something to come to you, I mean, that getting right. that, doing that thing like 1% better each day will impact
so much
everybody around you. So, everybody. Yeah.
But that 3-year-old, that baby that we adopted that I never thought I would want to adopt pulled me out of my depression. So the package that came wrapped in newspaper and not wrapping paper, and didn't have the bow that I wanted, and didn't have, we didn't have a baby showers and all the stuff came, and it changed my life because I understand that rarely do we get things perfectly. It brought me back. It brought me back to neutral, and so that's the lesson: is open your heart up, be willing to be changed in this world. I'm willing to be used. And that willingness changed my life. The little girl lived, and I love my wife and my older daughter. But it was just something that the way that it demonstrated a lot to me. It demonstrated a lot to me on how to live and stop pushing the button and look around and see who else needs something. And then that's how we get to our goal. It's never by yourself. And we can't figure it out. There's no calculation. There's no book. Just be a good person and see people and be a part of what's going on. I realized that it's not just about me. And even so much so that everything that I was working for came to pass when I opened my heart and stopped needing perfection.